Good afternoon. This is the conference operator. Welcome and thank you for joining the D'Amico International Shipping First Quarter 2026 Results web call. All participants are in listen-only mode, and after the presentation, there will be a Q&A session. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Federico Rosen, CFO. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our earnings call. So jumping as usual to our slide number 7, snapshot of our fleet. At the end of March 26, we had 29 vessels on the water, of which 27 owned and 2 bareboat charter. We actually, as you know, sold one of these ships and we delivered her to her buyers on the 21st of April. So now the ships on the water are 28. On top of that, we have 10 vessels under construction, 4 ones with expected delivery in 2027, 4 MRs with expected delivery in 2029, and 2 handies with expected delivery in 2029 as well. Average age of our fleet at the end of the period was 9.8 years. 93% of the fleet was eco-design at the period end. Now this percentage rose to 96% after the sale of the high tide. And moving to the next slide, on the back front, we kept on executing our strategy of gradually repaying some of our most expensive debt and refinancing a portion of that with a new facility at a much lower cost of debt. So we've been doing that also in Q1 26. We refinanced, as you can see, we repaid that for $32.2 million on 2 vessels. We drew down new facilities for $42 million on 3 ships, at a considerably lower margin over the US dollar SOFR. On top of that, our strategy was also based on reducing or eliminating our debt maturing in 2027, which is also a year in which we will get the delivery, as I mentioned before, of 4-1 vessels. So now, as you can see, we're expecting to be active again on the financing front in the remainder part of 2026, and we'll basically get to 2027 with no debt to mature. Also, looking on the right-hand side, you can see, as always, our daily bank loan repayment on our own vessels, which was historically in 2019 at $6,150 a day, and it's now $2,049 a day. Here's slide 9. We provide, as usual, our estimated TC earnings for the second quarter of the year, which has been so far much stronger than what we achieved in the first quarter of 26. As you can see, we have already fixed 21% of our days at $59,733 a day on the spot market. At the same time, we covered 60% of our Q2 days at $23,560 a day. So overall, as we speak, we're talking about 81% of our total days in Q2 26, fixed at a blended average TC of over $33,000 a day. So we are expecting an extremely profitable quarter at the end of June. Next slide. Estimated fleet evolution, so based on the, considering also the vessel that we recently sold, we expect to have right now an average fleet of 28.3 vessels in 26, rising with the delivery, with the expected delivery of our 10 new building vessels to 34.7 by 2029. On the right, you see also our potential upside to earnings, our sensitivity to the spot market, the spot rate. So as we speak, for every $1,000 a day of a higher spot rate, that would translate in $3 million more on our bottom line. And of course, this figure increases for 27 and 28, since our coverage is lower as we speak for those years. And right now, we have a sensitivity of approximately $8 million for 27 and $11 million for 28. At the bottom of the slide, interesting graph on the left. So based on everything that we have fixed so far, both in terms of time charter and spot market, and assuming to run the rest of the year at a break-even level, we would make a net result at the end of the year of almost $83 million. And the same goes for the little we already fixed for 27, and the figure would be $16.5 million already. Then on the right, we also show a sensitivity compared to this figure that I just mentioned. So should we run the remaining 3 days of 26 at an average of $20,000 a day, then our net result for the year would be of almost $98 million. Should we run it at $22,500 a day, the net result would rise to $105 million. Should we make $25,000 a day on the remaining 3 days of the year, then our net result would be even higher to $112.5 million. On the cost front, it's always not particularly meaningful to look at the OPEX cost on a quarterly basis. Anyway, we saw a slight increase in Q1 26 relative to the same period of last year. So we had a daily OPEX on our fleet of $8,600 a day. The reason for this small increase relative to the same quarter of 25 was driven mostly by some higher crew expenses and insurance costs. On the G&A front, we actually had a total cost of $5.3 million in the first quarter of the year compared to $6 million in Q1 25, so a slight decrease of approximately $700,000. Again, here the increase, we've mentioned this many times, the increase that you can see relative to the previous years is obviously due to the variable personnel compensation, which is directly linked to the strong financial performance that this has achieved in recent years. Net financial position. So very strong net financial position at the end of the quarter. We had cash equivalent of $189.6 million. Net financial position of $25.8 million, excluding some small effects still arising from the application of IFRS 16, our net financial position was of $23.8 million. And that compares to a fleet market value assessed by one of the top shipping brokers globally of $1.2 billion. So the ratio between our net financial position and our fleet market value at the end of March 26 was of only 2%. And I'd like to remind you that this ratio was almost 73% at the end of 2018 when we started executing our deleveraging plan the last years. Following slide, on the income statement side, we generated in the first 3 months of the year a net profit of $27.5 million compared to $18.9 million in the same quarter of the previous year. Very strong EBITDA of almost $41 million, which entails an EBITDA margin of 60.5%, extremely strong. Excluding some small non-recurring items, we achieved an adjusted net profit of $26.8 million in the first quarter of the year compared to $19.2 million in Q1 25. Key operating measures. We achieved a daily spot rate of $32,264 a day in the first quarter of the year. This figure is actually 90% higher than the last quarter of 25, which is, which was already the best quarter of the 2025, and 53% higher than the first quarter of 2025. At the same time, we covered 62.2% of our total days of the first 3 months of the year, an average of $23,000 a day. So our total blended ATC was $26,500 a day for the first quarter of the year. And I pass it on to Carlos.
Good afternoon. As usual, we now continue with our CapEx commitments, which in relation to our investment plan comprising 10 vessels amounts to around $512 million, and with outstanding commitments of around $437 million. Most of these outlays planned for 27 and 29 coinciding with the deliveries of the vessels. In 27, we will be receiving four LR1s, and then in 29, two MR1s and four MR2s, all ordered at first class Chinese shipyards. In relation to the options on the lease vessels, well, the recent movement in forward interest rates makes it less likely that these options will be exercised this year. Both of them can be exercised at any point in time with 3 months' notice. We continue monitoring the situation, and when a window opens up for us to exercise them, generating value for the company, we will do so. Here we show instead the difference between the market value and the exercise price at the exercise date of the options we exercised on the six vessels which were previously time chartered in. And we also show today the difference, or at the end of March, the difference between their market value and their book value, which is even higher than this difference was at the time of exercise. So, so far, the exercise of these options has generated substantial value for the company. In terms of contract coverage, we now have 55% coverage for 2026 at an average rate of 23,400, slightly higher rate of 23,500 for 2027, with, however, a much lower coverage of 23%. The fleet is increasingly eco, as mentioned by Federico. We only have one non-eco vessel in our fleet, which we plan to sell by the end of the year. In terms of freight rates, well, as already highlighted by Federico, the fixtures in Q2 have been extremely strong, reflecting the very strong spot market, as seen from the graph on the left-hand side with the yellow line, which depicts MR spot clean earnings, which is at record levels. And short-term TCs, one-year TCs have reached record levels. Asset values have moved also up, older vessels by a higher percentage, new buildings not that much, but there was also an uptick in new building prices. And here, well, this is the major contributor to these exceptional markets. But of course, this is the Iran conflict is being layered upon other geopolitical factors which were already supporting the market, as well as a strong underlying fundamentals for the sector. So it added more fuel to this rally, and you see refining margins, which at very high levels, especially for certain products like the jet fuel and diesel, creating arbitrage opportunities that are not always open on all routes. They open and close, but they are there. This is creating quite a lot of volatility also on rates, on spot rates in different regions. As the conflict started, we saw a very strong market west of Suez and much weaker market east of Suez. Vessels then moved west. Today, there's not that much difference between the average rates that can be achieved in both basins. The disruption because of the war is very significant. There were around 20 million barrels per day transiting the strait last year on average of oil, crude, and refined products. The beginning of the first 2 months of this year, the figure was even slightly higher, around 21. During the conflict, there were moments where there was quite a lot of volatility in the amount of oil that transited. There were some brief moments where more vessels were able to transit, but on average, just under 2 million barrels per day were able to transit through Hormuz during the period. And 4 million barrels per day were redirected with pipelines to Yanbu or to Fujairah or Ceyhan, therefore creating a net disruption of around 14 million barrels per day of lost flows. This was then compensated partly by releases by the EIA of the announced release of 100 million barrels, which, however, is being injected into the market at a rhythm of around 2 million barrels per day. And also by a drop in demand, of course, which is starting to become quite pronounced, and it's linked both to the high prices affecting demand for the products where there is a bit more elasticity price elasticity of demand. Generally, they are quite inelastic, but also measures taken by certain governments, in particular in Asia, to reduce consumption. And of course, the delta is being met through reduction in stocks, which were quite abundant, in particular in certain countries before the conflict started. So this, as we will see later, has helped the market so far, but it is dangerous. And as the stocks start reaching critical levels, there is a risk that oil prices could rise much faster than what we have seen so far, and that economic activity could be much more severely impacted than what we have seen so far. I'd like to highlight that. I mean, from our perspective, the reopening of the strait would be a positive, because we are more concerned about the closure of the strait for too long, because of the negative associated economic consequences. But the reopening instead should create some pent-up demand for our vessels, at least in the beginning, to rebuild stocks which were depleted during the conflict at a very rapid pace. These are factors which have supported the market throughout last year, and which explain the strengthening market that we saw throughout last year, beginning of this year, before the conflict started. So there was a lot of oil being pushed into the market, but also a lot of inefficiencies because of the tougher sanctions that were being imposed on vessels trading Russian and Iranian and Venezuelan barrels. Therefore, we saw this sharp increase in sanctioned oil and water last year. A huge increase in the number of vessels sanctioned, which reached over 1,000 vessels, representing 19% of the overall tanker fleet in deadweight terms. So we are now starting to see this unwinding. So we see that sanctioned oil and water has been falling, also because there were temporary waivers provided for this sanctioned oil to be discharged because of the war in Iran. So initially these waivers were provided to Russian oil, but then also to Iranian oil. The Red Sea disruptions was very supportive in the first 9 months of 2024, but as mentioned, this became actually a headwind for the market afterwards because the higher costs of the longer routes through Cape of Good Hope meant that products were traded more regionally, and ton miles actually declined thereafter because of this disruption. Venezuela, this is a positive for the market. This oil used to be transported on sanctioned vessels, so now it is being transported on compliant vessels. It is very beneficial, in particular for the Aframax sector, which are the most suited type of vessels to transport these cargoes out of Venezuela, but indirectly benefits also the product tankers transporting CPP through the well-known transmission mechanism that we will see later, whereby we have seen a lot of LR2s transiting into dirty trades. Here this is the forecast that we by the U.S. Energy Information Administration the production of Venezuela for 26.1 million barrels, but they actually have seen a report recently where it indicates that their production has already reached 1.2 million barrels per day. So surpassing these estimates. Returning to the production levels of the late 1990s will take time most likely, but this initial ramp up was faster than anticipated. So Russia's refined product exports continue declining, although staying at quite high levels, both as a result of the tougher sanctions that were imposed, a larger number of sanctioned vessels, but also as a result of attacks by the Ukrainians with drones to export facilities, Russian export facilities. So it creates usually not very significant damage, but it does hamper their ability to export products, and we have seen these attacks occurring on a quite frequent basis, and it's creating a further obstacle to Russian exports. These are the estimates of the EIA in terms of demand and throughputs, refinery throughputs. Sharp drop in demand as could be expected in Q2, a very sharp drop in refined volumes, in particular in April, with a recovery thereafter. Of course, it's very difficult to make such forecasts in this environment. A lot will depend on how the conflict with Iran evolves in the coming weeks. Also, in terms of oil supply, very difficult to make forecasts. I mean, this was a market which was very well supplied. It was expected to move into contango during the course of this year, and now we are faced with the opposite situation, with a very undersupplied market, as just mentioned. Inventories were at good levels before the war started, and we are already seeing this drawdown here in the floating oil and total oil at sea, which has been declining over the last 2 months at quite a fast clip. And here we see this previously mentioned transmission mechanism between the dirty and clean markets, with an increasing number of LR2s trading dirty, as depicted by the yellow line on the graph on the left, and the rapidly declining number of LR2s trading clean. Despite the quite fast deliveries of LR2s last year and in the beginning of this year. And this is because, of course, of the very strong markets, the dirty markets, the Aframax rates, which are still at very high levels. In terms of refinery landscape, there's not much new here. There were important closures of refineries in the Americas and in Europe over the last few years. And with a new refinery capacity coming online in China, the Middle East, and other Asian countries, in particular in India. So this increase in ton miles as Europe and the Americas have to import more from these more distant locations. The fleet on the supply side continues aging rapidly, and the order book on the MR and LR1 sectors, which are those we operate in after peaking at the end of 24, had started declining, despite there being, orders continuing to come in, but at a lower rate, and at a lower rate that, relative to the delivery of new vessels. So at the end of March, this order book had declined to 13.5% relative to almost 21% of this fleet, which it has already more than 20 years of age. So important to note that by the end of 27, the portion of the fleet which is more than 20 years of age will have risen to almost 25%. So a very sharp increase, which bodes well for the market also next year. This is not surprising. This percentage, which is rising, of the fleet, which is crossing the 20-year threshold, because it is aligned with the graph at the bottom where we show the vessels reaching 25 years of age. So the vessels which will reach 20 years of age in 27 are those that will be reaching 25 years of age in 2032. And we see here by this graph that this represents 7.7% of the fleet, around 10 million deadweight tons. So a very big number and portion of the fleet reaching 20 years of age already next year, and starting to trade on more marginal trades. The picture is not as favorable if we look at across all tankers, so including also crude tankers, because there has been quite a lot of orders coming in for crude tankers over the last few months. So here the order book rose to 20%. And is now pretty much aligned with the portion of the fleet which has more than 20 years of age. We can have a strong product tanker market even without a strong crude tanker market, but the opposite is not true. I mean, a strong crude tanker market will eventually generate a strong product tanker market. That is because the crude tanker market is much bigger than the product tanker market, as you see here looking at the left-hand axis. When we include also the crude tankers, that the fleet size is much, much bigger than if we look only at product tankers. We look here at the deliveries, which have been accelerated. The positive thing to highlight here is that most of the deliveries, the quarter with the largest number of vessels to be delivered was Q1, and that is already behind us. And we are still in an extremely strong market, despite this huge number of, quite large number of vessels, I would say, delivered in Q1. And if you instead look at deliveries in the coming quarters, they're actually not too dissimilar from what we saw in the last two quarters of the last year. In particular, if you look at Q4 26, there are 75 tankers being delivered relative to 71 in Q4 25. So very, very similar number of vessels. Here you look at the vessels that were ordered in the first 4 months of this year, 28, which analyzed puts it pretty much on par with the just over 80 vessels ordered in 25, which is quite a low number compared to the over 200 vessels ordered in 25 and over 150 in 23. And especially relative to the over 200 vessels, for example, ordered in 2013 when the fleet was much smaller. So these 225 vessels ordered in 13 represented a much bigger portion of the fleet than, for example, the 200 vessels ordered in 2014. And the fleet growth is accelerating, but as I mentioned, the sub 20 fleet growth, even in 26 across all tankers, is actually less than 1%. So this is supportive for the market this year and will be supportive also next year, because next year there are even more vessels turning 20 years of age. Our NAV has been rising. NAV per share at the end of March was at around $10, and our discount at the end of the quarter was of 14%. And today it's even lower than that, so below 10%. Of course, this relative to the 31st of March NAV, but this is a moving target. We know, for example, that some of our vessels that were valued at the 31st of March at a certain level today would be valued more, because there were some transactions that happened afterwards for vessels which are very similar at higher levels than the valuations we received from the broker at 31st of March. Not much higher, but still higher. And of course, we also generated a lot of cash in April this year. And finally, here, in terms of our payout ratio, it has been rising throughout the last few years in quite a regular fashion, with this 55% payout ratio out of the 2025 net results, which is the highest payout ratio we have had. And of course, the balance sheet also, which strengthened significantly, as previously mentioned by Federico. So that's it, and we pass it over to the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. To enter the queue for questions, please click on the Q&A icon on the left side of your screen. When announced, please click continue on the pop-up window. If you are connected in audio only, please press star and one on your telephone. The first question is from Massimo Bonisoli of Equita. Please go ahead.
Hello, Carlos and Federico. I have two questions. One on the Strait of Hormuz reopening. Could you elaborate on the minimum safety and operational conditions required for the MICO to resume transit through the Strait of Hormuz, in the sense that there are plenty of situation to be cleared, and we still don't know when the Strait will open for commercial traffic. The second question is on the spot rate evolution, referring to your slide 9 of the presentation. Spot fixture in April were running close to $60,000 per day. Could you provide some color on the trend seen so far in May and on the current environment? Based on the latest contract concluded or under negotiation, do you expect the average realized spot rate in Q2 to remain around these levels, improve further, or maybe normalize somewhat versus April peaks? Thank you.
Thank you, Massimo. Two good questions. So in terms of the transit through Hormuz, we are not going to be the first one venturing in that. I mean, we have to make sure that, you know, our main priority will be the safety of our crew. So an assessment will have to be made that the passage is safe. And of course, we will need to be able to ensure the risk, which will be reimbursed to us by the charterer. There are in situations like this also exclusions to the policy, which can mean that you are still exposed to quite a lot of risk. So we will assess this very carefully. There's also the risk of mines still. So there has been some demining happening, but we don't know to what extent this has progressed and it's near to completion. So we'll take a prudent approach in that respect and try to employ our vessels in other regions initially. One port which we could consider calling initially could be the port of Duqm, which is close but outside the Strait of Hormuz, for example, and which is also where there's also an important refinery which exports significant amounts, and so that could be something we could consider, but we would be very prudent in that respect. In terms of the rates achieved, the almost 60,000 that we have shown for Q2 so far includes also some fixtures that run into May. The latest fixtures, I would say, are at slightly lower levels than that on average. They are still at very good levels. I mean, today the spot market is still above 30,000 in both basins, both east and west. There was more of a correction west recently, but I believe it is a temporary correction. This market in the US Gulf has always been very volatile. For example, the arbitrage for exporting NAFTA out of the US Gulf closed momentarily a few weeks ago. As we had shown in the presentation when we approved our year-end results, it had risen to record highs, and thereafter it collapsed to levels which were lower than those we had before the conflict started, and now it's starting to move up again. And analysts believe that it could, in the coming weeks, rise further and possibly return to those very high levels we saw, because there's going to be an important need to import petrochemicals into Asia if Hormuz doesn't and open up in a important way soon. So very hard to forecast what will happen. Of course, if there is a reopening, we expect a big surge in freight rates east of Suez,
because we will be seeing more exports out of Hormuz, transiting Hormuz, but not only. I think also China will then, of course, be exporting much more. China initially, after the conflict started, stopped exports of refined products. As a result, its stocks rose and are very abundant right now. And it recently declared that it will already, even without the Hormuz reopening, start exporting again in a more limited way to certain countries. It's going to be it's more of a political move also to support some friendly countries which are suffering in this moment. But that in itself already should help the market in the North Asia region in the coming weeks. But with a reopening of Hormuz, then we should see a normalization of Chinese exports. So even bigger volumes coming to market, as well as, of course, a lot of volumes coming out of Hormuz. Potentially, you know, if the reopening, if the passage of the strait is deemed safe by all, very large flows coming out of Hormuz because tank storage in that area is full. So they have a very strong incentive to push out product very fast out of that region. So, and we don't have a lot of vessels there because we have all these vessels that move into the Atlantic basin. So we expect that basin to strengthen a lot. So again, this location, which on a net basis will be positive for the market. The markets should come down in the US Gulf, but net, I think it would be positive for the market. So I'm quite positive, but it's very difficult to make forecasts in this moment. I think that's it in terms of answers.
If I may squeeze in another question, Carlos, just to understand how your fleet is positioned between east and west of Hormuz right now.
We'd like to keep it quite because we want to. It's very difficult to read and to make calls. We are trying to keep quite a balanced allocation of the fleet. Few vessels in the Americas. Some trading West Africa, and then a similar number in Asia, trading out of mostly Southeast Asia and in North Asia, out of Korea and out of Singapore. We have done some Australia runs recently. There was an increase in demand into Australia of refined products. There was a fire in an important refinery in Australia, so that there's also a seasonal uptick in demand now before the winter season there, which was then also associated with an additional demand because of this fire in this refinery there. Whatever happens, we should do quite well.
Very clear. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Clement Mullins, Value Investors Edge. Mr. Mullins, please go ahead. Your line is open. Please click continue. I think you are on mute. The next question is from Matteo Bonizzoni, Kepler Cheuvreux.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I have a quick question with regard to your capital allocation flexibility, let's say. So I would like to know if the current market environment, which is probably above what you had, what everybody had in mind in terms of rates and profitability and cash flow, could have implication on our dividend policy or buyback, or also on the feasibility to further expand the fleet after the recent, I mean, decision which you have communicated on the new buildings. But I mean, you have clearly more room to go potentially. So I would like to know what are your current thoughts as regards future capital allocation choices. Thanks.
Thank you, Matteo. Look, I think that at this moment, there isn't the very strong markets should not affect our policies in this respect. We don't, we will, of course, look very carefully when we are closer to the end of the year, what could be the dividend policy out of the 2026 results. If the market is as strong as it looks it will be this year, then it is likely that we will be able to confirm a similar payout ratio than we had in 2025. Also in terms of buyback, we will only do it very opportunistically if we see some very substantial unjustified weakness on the share price. The fleet-wise, we don't expect to make other investments at this stage. We are quite happy with the 10 vessels we have ordered. But if opportunities were to arise, more because of an unexpected correction, which creates an attractive entry point, then we might decide to take advantage of that. But with the 10 vessels we have ordered, today we have 28 vessels on the water. That represents quite a big percentage of our fleet, over $500 million in investments. So we don't feel we need to do more, but we will look at opportunities if they arise.
Clear. Thank you.
The next question is from Climent Molins, Value Investor's Edge.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. Sorry for the technical problems before. Most has already been covered, but has the recent increase in asset prices changed your view on potentially exercising the purchase options on the High Fidelity and the High Discovery before than previously expected?
Yeah, the purchase options on the Fidelity and Discovery is the decision is more linked to the interest rate environment from our perspective, because these are fixed rates financing transactions, which were done at a time where interest rates were very low. So of course, the implicit margin in these deals is high relative to what we can achieve today, but the swap, implicit swap rate is instead very low. So the all-in cost of financing on these deals is actually quite competitive still today. And we would need interest rates to move down more the forward interest rate curve to make the exercise of these options attractive. Otherwise, for us, it is probably more convenient to reimburse some floating rate debt that we have, which is costing us more than these facilities here. So that is our thinking today. I mean, of course, we have the necessary liquidity to exercise these options, but there are also other things we can do with the liquidity that
is potentially more attractive for us. So we will only exercise them if we see this decrease in forward rates.
Makes sense. Thanks for the cover. I'll turn it over.
Thank you for the question, Clement.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please click on the Q&A icon on the left side of your screen or press star 1 on your telephone. For any further questions, please click on the Q&A icon on the left side of your screen or press star 1 on your telephone. Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for participating in our call today. And look forward to seeing you soon when we approve our Q2 results. And good afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining. The conference is now over. You may disconnect your devices. Thank you.